the clerk? Are you the clerk this afternoon?
That's correct. Good afternoon.
Oh, boy. Can you do a sound check again, please?
That was my fault. Sorry. We're all good.
All right. Good. Excellent. We'll bring the council session to order. Now, this is the Thursday, June 30th, 2022 afternoon session of the Portland City Council. Megan, please call the roll.
Ryan.
Here.
Hardesty. Maps.
Here.
Rubio.
Here.
Wheeler.
Here. We'll now hear from legal counsel on the rules of order and decorum. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Portland City Council. The City Council is holding hybrid meetings with limited in-person attendance in addition to electronic attendance. If you wish to testify before council in person or virtually, you must sign up in advance by visiting the council agenda on the council clerk's webpage at www.portland.gov/council/agenda. You may also sign up for communication to briefly speak about any subject. You may also sign up for public testimony on resolutions, reports, or first readings of ordinances. In-person testimony may occur from one of several locations, including City Council Chambers and the Lovejoy Room in City Hall and the Portland Building. Written testimony must be submitted at cctestimony@portlandoregon.gov. Your testimony should address the matter being considered at the time. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. Please disclose if you're a lobbyist. If you're representing an organization, please identify it. The presiding officer preserves order and decorum during City Council meetings so everyone can feel welcome, comfortable, respected, and safe. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. A timer will indicate when your time is done. Disruptive conduct, such as shouting, refusing to conclude your testimony when your time is up, or interrupting others' testimony or council deliberations will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in the person being ejected for the remainder of the meeting. After being ejected, a person who fails to leave the meeting is subject to arrest for trespass. Additionally, council may take a short recess and reconvene virtually.
Thank you for that. Megan, could you please read item 603, an emergency ordinance?
Readopt remanded ordinance number 189807 to restrict bulk fossil fuel terminals.
Colleagues, today we're holding a hearing on zoning code amendments to restrict bulk fossil fuel terminals. We will not be voting on this today. This project is being brought to us by the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, so I invite Commissioner Rubio to give opening remarks and to introduce our staff. Good afternoon, Commissioner. Commissioner Maps.
Is this an emergency ordinance?
Yes, but it's also a land use hearing, so we go through a slightly different process.
Thank you.
I'll go ahead and explain all that at the end of the meeting, but the important thing for today is we will be taking testimony, but we will not be voting on this today per state land use laws. Commissioner Rubio.
Thank you, Mayor. The storage of fossil fuels is a threat to our community. They are a safety threat to our community because Portland's industrial districts have a high risk of liquefaction in the event of a major Cascadia subduction zone earthquake. And as we work to make our community safer, the first step is to ensure that the situation does not get worse. Continuing to allow new fossil fuel terminals and new fossil fuel storage tanks increases the risk to the surrounding industrial district, the Willamette River, and the entire city. City Council previously adopted this ordinance in 2019. Since that time, it has been appealed to the Oregon Land Use Board of Appeals, LUBA, which has remanded or sent back the decision to council for additional findings to show it is consistent with our comprehensive plan policies. BPS has prepared those additional findings and the ordinance is now back before us. Tom Armstrong from BPS will now give us an overview of the ordinance since only two members of council, Mayor Wheeler and Commissioner Hardesty, were on council when these zoning code amendments were first adopted in 2019. Tom Armstrong.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. I'm Tom Armstrong. I use he, him pronouns, and I am a supervising planner at the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability and the project manager for this project. I am going to share my screen and have a short slideshow for you today to give you an overview of the ordinance. So as Commissioner Rubio said, this is round three for these zoning code amendments. I just To start, wanted to give some context on how these zoning code amendments fit with the other fossil fuel initiatives and decisions that have been before council or will be before council in the near future. The Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, in addition to working on these zoning code amendments, have been working on an update to the city's renewable fuel standard that will be coming to you later this fall. But it's important to note that we have been coordinating these actions, and you will see later in the presentation how we're supporting that transition to a cleaner renewable fuel in Portland. The renewable fuel standard is not a zoning code standard. It is a separate part of the city code. It regulates renewable fuel content sold in Portland at retail gas stations. And when we look at where we want to go with that policy, we foresee a need that may require additional tank capacity at our terminals to store the fuel blends that are needed in Portland to comply with the renewable fuel standard. Therefore, you will see we have proposed an amendment to make it clear that terminals can add that capacity under these zoning code regulations. We've also seen the land use compatibility statement that the Bureau of Development Services has, denied by Zenith Terminals. That land use compatibility statement is a city statement that determines the compliance with not only our zoning, but our comp plan policies. And it's required by the Zenith Terminals for their renewal of their DEQ air quality permit. That permit denial is currently under appeal by Zenith to the Oregon Supreme Court. And therefore, it's not really impacted by these zoning code amendments and is really on hold as a city decision until the Supreme Court makes a decision as to whether or not they are going to accept that case. In terms of Portland, we have 11 existing bulk fossil fuel terminals in Portland. They are up and down the Portland Harbor along Highway 30. 10 of them are what I would call petroleum terminals that handle fuel, lubricants, asphalt, other petroleum products, as well as renewable fuels that come into the region either via the Olympic pipeline from the Puget Sound refineries or via barge and ship via the Columbia River and up the Willamette, or come in via rail with our rail connections. The 11th terminal is a Northwest liquid natural gas facility that is used as for peak heating needs in the wintertime. And one of the issues that LUBA had remanded the previous ordinance on was more consideration as to how limits on storage tank capacity at Northwest Natural might impact future needs. And we have hired a consultant, an energy consultant, that prepared a memo that's in the record that shows that not only does Northwest Natural not rely on expansion of the Portland LNG facility to meet future needs, but it also explains sort of the regional natural gas system and how future needs for the entire region could be met elsewhere and through other available supplies outside of the city of Portland. The main reason we are here today and wanting to readopt these restrictions is because all of these terminals are located in an area that is at high probability and high risk of liquefaction in a major earthquake. And the reason that we apply these restrictions to all industrial areas in Portland is because virtually all industrial areas in Portland are in these areas that are red on this map from the Oregon Department of Geology and Minerals. And so, you know, there is no location that's at lower risk, no industrial areas in Portland that are a lower risk where these bulk fossil fuel terminals could be sited. You know, a brief history, the Portland City Council has a long history of opposing the expansion of fossil fuel infrastructure. It goes back to 2012 when City Council passed a resolution opposing oil trains. In 2014, we had a proposal from Pembina to create a propane export terminal on the Columbia River. The city deliberated on that proposal and eventually declined to change the zoning code to enable that terminal. At the same time that was going on, we were also developing our climate action plan in 2015. And as a result of that proposal, we developed comprehensive plan policies to limit the fossil fuel infrastructure and storage to what is necessary to serve the region. And I can go into that a little bit in here. And then coming out of that work, in 2016 is the first time we adopted these zoning code amendments. That first round was appealed all the way to the Oregon Supreme Court. We prevailed on most of the legal issues, and it was remanded back to the city for additional findings on some of our policies. We did that work again in 2019, and again, it was appealed to LUBA. And again, LUBA found there were five or six policies or parts of policies that needed additional information. And that's the information that is part of this, that supports these amendments again, as part of this third round of adopting this ordinance. What the code does is define a new land use category called bulk fossil fuel terminals. And that enables us to regulate in terms of where that is allowed, where it's prohibited. And we, as I explained before, we prohibit new bulk fossil fuel terminals in all of our zones. The zones outside of the industrial areas are inappropriate for such a heavy industrial use. And our industrial areas are largely covered with these high risk liquefaction areas. However, in compliance with the comprehensive plan policies, we designate existing fossil fuel terminals to become limited uses. That maintains their legal standing. They can continue to operate. And the only restriction on their operations through these zoning code amendments is that they cannot add new fossil fuel storage tank capacity. These regulations really are about storage tank capacity. We have a few exceptions to that limit, particularly for jet fuel, which the future fuel demand forecast shows is the fastest growing component of petroleum transportation fuels for Oregon. And so we've created an exception to that. What we've also enabled the existing terminals to reconfigure and replace and rebuild their existing tank capacity, so that they can do seismic upgrades to those tanks. They can, you know, change the configuration. They can consolidate lots of small tanks into large tanks. They just can't exceed the total capacity, fossil fuel storage tank capacity that exists out there today under these under these regulations. As I said, BPS has proposed amendment package number one that has a number of changes to the base ordinance. The base zoning code changes have a few technical changes to them to recognize other changes in the zoning code that have taken place since 2019. So it brings it all into conformance. But these next three slides where I talk about are sort of the new amendments to the previous ordinance. And I will say that these amendments are largely in response to discussions that we had with the terminal operators and their representatives to add clarity to the regulations to achieve some of our other policy goals. The first one is to the use limitation itself. And what you see here highlighted in yellow, we just want to make clear that adding new tank capacity for the exclusive use of renewable fuels or to comply with the city's renewable fuel standard is allowed or is not considered an increase in capacity at the terminal. That the ability to add capacity for renewable fuels was already there in the previous ordinance. You had to combine a few different, interpret a few different phrases in different parts of the code. And so we wanted to make this change here to be explicit that that new renewable fuel tank capacity is allowed under these under this ordinance. The compliance with the renewable fuel standard, it, again, is a new exception that is in response to both our discussions with the terminal operators, as well as other BPS staff that are working on the update to the renewable fuel standard. The other change that we did is we split the definition of fossil fuel into two definitions. So previous to this, the definition of fossil fuel included a reference or a definition of renewable fuel. And what we've done here with this ordinance and these changes is to split that into two separate clear definitions of both what is a fossil fuel and what is a renewable fuel. Again, to make that clear. And then also in the code commentary, we've made references under the renewable fuel definition to a number of different federal standards that are different formulas that the federal government has designated as being renewable fuel. And we wanted to include that those references in the record as sort of future guidance on how to interpret this definition. The final change is to the use category description itself. And this really is to clarify, again, to clarify what is a bulk fossil fuel terminal. And there really is three components that make up a bulk fossil fuel terminal. One is they have to have sort of access, a transportation access point that is outside the region. So how that fuel comes in or how the fuel goes out, it outside of the region, not by truck. So do you have pipeline access? Do you have access to a dock? Do you have access to a rail facility? So that's one criteria. The other criteria is that you have what we call transloading facilities. The pipes and the systems and the offloading racks that enable a terminal to transfer the fuel from one mode of transportation, say rail, to a storage tank, and then to another mode of transportation, a pipe out to a dock to a barge. So that's the second characteristic. There are some cases, and we end that definition of some bulk fossil fuel terminals right there at regional access and transloading facilities. And we created that category because we did not want new terminals that could direct transfer between modes. So think of a long rail car unit train pulling up to a dock and offloading their the product directly into a ship. Or another example would be a coal terminal. Coal terminals don't have storage tanks. They have a big pile of coal sitting on the ground. And so we wanted to make sure no new coal terminals. So that's sort of one category of bulk fossil fuel terminals. The other category is the terminals that have regional access, transloading facilities, and more than 2 million gallons of storage capacity. Most of the terminals that we, the liquid petroleum terminals that we have out in Portland today, have between 10 and 60 million gallons of storage capacity. So this is a low level of storage to limit the risk from new terminals. So it is feasible that a new business could locate in Portland with all of this, regional access and transloading facilities, multimodal facilities, and have 2 million gallons of storage capacity. That would be a pretty small facility with pretty limited risk. I think one of the things that we have looked closely at, and there is a memo in the record, has to do with the concern that Portland and Oregon and the Pacific Northwest region that is served by the Portland terminals will need fuel to grow. To grow our economy as our population grows. This graph here comes from the Oregon Department of Energy that shows for the state of Oregon over the last 20 years, as we've grown both in population and our economy has grown, our energy consumption has been virtually flat. And we can show this with more detail in terms of natural gas, in terms of petroleum products as well. At the same time, the data that is available around total energy consumption or total petroleum consumption, the data doesn't really account for the renewable component that has been increasing in our sort of general petroleum consumption. So as our motor gasoline has had, ethanol as a renewable fuel added to it, that just gets lumped in with the motor gasoline numbers. Same is true for diesel. As the renewable content of diesel has increased under the DEQ Clean Fuels Program, that all gets sort of counted as just general fossil diesel consumption. So we've had flat consumption, and within that, there's been an increasing amount of renewables in that overall number. The other thing that we've looked at is the federal forecast out to the year 2050 in terms of what the federal government thinks that we in Oregon and we in the Pacific region expect in terms of future fuel demands. And these forecasts look at population growth, look at the economy, look at fuel efficiency standards, look at electrical vehicle uptake. And what you'll see here is that they are forecasting a decline in gasoline consumption over that period, an increase in jet fuel, pretty flat consumption of distillate fuel oil, which is diesel. Just a small increase in overall petroleum consumption, most of which is jet fuel, which we have an exception for, and a small increase in natural gas, which our analysis shows does not need to be accommodated with additional storage in Portland. Finally, I will close this presentation with, so far we have received 86 pieces of written testimony in the MAP app, and there's the website where that testimony can be accessed. We also have a full record of evidence available through the auditor's website that includes all of the background studies that I've referred to here, as well as the wide range of studies that we have relied upon to create the findings in support of this ordinance. And that concludes my presentation this afternoon.
Thank you. Commissioner Rubio, I'll do this at your discretion, but I understand you have some amendments that Tom has just outlined. Would you like to put those on the table?
Yes, thanks, Mayor. I move to adopt the BPS clarifying amendments as shown in Exhibit B, the remand report.
Very good, I'll second. So Commissioner Rubio moves, I'll second. We're not gonna vote on these. We'll keep the amendments open for public discussion. Colleagues, at this point, before we ask for invited testimony, public testimony, are there any questions for Tom? Seeing none, Commissioner Rubio, I understand there is some invited testimony, and I'll let you go ahead and handle that.
Great. Thank you, Mayor. I'm now pleased to introduce Multnomah County Commissioner Sushila Jayapal and Representative Khan Pham to share remarks about this item.
Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler and Commissioners, Commissioner Rubio. I am Sushila Jayapal, Multnomah County Commissioner for District 2. I use she, her pronouns, and very happy to be here with you this afternoon. I testified in support of this ordinance back in December of 2019, so I thank you for persevering in the work to adopt it. Multnomah County, like you, has been clear for some time now that our values around safety, health, and the environment compel us to oppose new fossil fuel infrastructure. In 2016, the Board of Commissioners adopted a resolution opposing oil by rail transport and any projects that would increase such transport. We adopted that resolution because of our recognition of the risks posed by the oil trains that carry volatile crude oil throughout the county. In 2019, the Board of Commissioners adopted a resolution to actively oppose any new or expanded fossil fuel infrastructure. That resolution recognized the risks posed by the critical energy infrastructure hub. In particular, as alluded to already, the danger of a Cascadia subduction zone earthquake and the resulting fuel spills from the CEI hub. Last year, consistent with that resolution, we opposed Zenith application for land use permit. We stated at the time that this was a legal fight worth having, and we appreciate your willingness to take on that fight. Thanks to our partnership with you, we know even more today about the risks associated with the CEI hub than we did in 2019. Earlier this year, we released the results of a study jointly funded by the city and the county, assessing the impacts of a Cascadia earthquake to the CEI hub. The study confirmed that the impacts would be catastrophic. An earthquake would trigger the oil spill that would immediately threaten human life and safety, physical structures, and the environment, and would cause longer-term pollution and health effects and economic disruption, all of which would disproportionately burden communities of color and low-income populations. The dollar cost was estimated as much as $2.6 billion. And I apologize, if you hear strange noises in the background, that is my dog. So please just bear with her. The dollar cost could be as much as $2.6 billion, and the non-monetizable costs would be much higher. With this clear understanding of the threats posed by fossil fuel infrastructure, expansion of the existing infrastructure simply poses too great an additional risk to our environmental and economic ecosystem and to our communities. And the risks I've mentioned today, of course, don't even begin to account for the overarching and existential threat of climate change caused by the burning of fossil fuel. Earlier today, the U.S. Supreme Court sharply restricted the Environmental Protection Agency's authority to regulate greenhouse gas emissions. This decision makes crystal clear that federal regulatory authority is likely to continue to be curtailed, making local action on a host of environmental fronts ever more crucial. We have to use all of the tools at our disposal to act now, to protect our shared future, and to minimize the harms threatened by fossil fuel storage and transportation. This ordinance is vital to that work. Thank you for bringing it forward. And my colleagues on the Multnomah County Board of Commissioners and I stand in full support. Thank you.
Good afternoon. Should I go ahead? Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler, Commissioners Rubio, Hardesty, Maps, and Ryan. My name is Khan Pham, and I'm the state representative for Oregon House District 46, which represents Southeast Portland, including Montevilla, Lentz, the J District, Foster Powell, and North and South Tabor neighborhoods. I apologize first. I want to say that I actually tested positive for COVID earlier this week, so I may talk a little slower and may interrupt with coughing, but I am delighted to be here today to testify in support of the swift reinstatement of these fossil fuel terminal zoning amendments. So when these amendments were passed in 2016, or when these were passed in 2016, it was the first local law in the nation to restrict fossil fuel expansion. Now, happily, this ordinance has been replicated by a growing number of local governments across the Northwest who share Portland's commitment to protect their communities from the public health disaster posed by the continued expansion of the fossil fuel industry. We are simultaneously living in a climate emergency and under the continuous threat of disaster from the expected magnitude 9.0 Cascadia earthquake. At all levels of government, community resiliency and environmental justice must guide every policy decision we make. And as Commissioner Jayapal pointed out, it's more important now than ever that local government takes action. This ordinance is the first necessary step on a path of transition away from fossil fuel dependency and towards protecting communities from the almost unimaginable disaster of an earthquake striking Portland's critical energy infrastructure hub. According to the report you commissioned with Multnomah County, if nothing is done, the earthquake will release an oil spill of the magnitude of the 2009 Deepwater Horizon spill right into the Willamette River. This will cost billions of dollars to clean up. But worst, this spill, the explosion and the release of airborne toxins will threaten the lives and well-being of North and Northeast Portlanders, communities who already face the highest health impact from decades of pollution at the Portland Harbor Superfund site. It will harm downriver communities, ecosystems, and the cultural and treaty reserved resources of six tribal nations with deep connections to the lower Willamette, as well as many other tribes and tribal communities across our region. So I am hopeful that this is the first step of many towards greater resilience. In the state, we are working to support Portland's efforts. With the passage of SB 1567 this year, we are requiring terminal owners to prepare seismic resiliency plans and directing Oregon Department of Energy to create a pathway towards resiliency and transition. In the long run, we must move away from combustion and towards maximum electrification of buildings and vehicles. For this reason, no exemptions or allowances for the fuel industry should be given, regardless of any promises to retrofit or threats of suit. We are looking to the city of Portland to stand strong and pass this ordinance in the best way possible. Local governments up and down the West Coast facing similar risks are looking to Portland for a model that works and strong precedent for the future. Now more than ever, we need dedicated and bold action to stop this once in a lifetime risk for the good of our entire region. Thank you so much.
That concludes our presentation, Mayor.
Thank you, Commissioner Rubio. Thanks to both of you for being here today and testifying in support. We will now open the floor to public testimony on the fossil fuels terminal zoning amendments and the BPS proposed amendments. Testifiers will be called in the order in which they signed up. Each person will have 2 minutes to testify. Megan, why don't you go ahead and start us off, please?
First, we have Jordan Braister. And I don't think Jordan is on. Next, we have Elijah Cetus.
Good evening, mayors and counselors. My name is Elijah Cetus. I'm a second year law student at Lewis and Clark College of Law, and I'm a climate law fellow with Breach Collective. At Breach, we partner with communities on the front lines of the climate crisis to advance justice through locally driven campaigns rooted in grassroots organizing, legal advocacy, and human stories. So this morning, we submitted written comments with our coalition partners representing 12 different organizations and thousands of members in the region to express our support for this passage of this law for the third time. We thank City Council and BPS staff for your steady commitment to protect this historic law and to continue to advance it despite 6 years of legal challenges from the fossil fuel industry and its allies. Representative Pham and Commissioner Jayapal mentioned, this is a critical law at a critical time. We're living in a climate emergency. We face the Cascadia earthquake. And we're also living in a crisis of governance. This morning, the Supreme Court held in West Virginia v. EPA that the agency is barred from regulating carbon emissions at fossil fuel plants. And whether we like it or not, it does fall on local governments at this critical moment to regulate the fossil fuel industry in our own backyards. By restricting the continued reckless expansion of this infrastructure, this ordinance is an important exercise of Portland's police powers to protect its citizens. Moving forward, we urge council to stand strong and pass the law without any exceptions or expansion allowances. And further, we urge council to amend the resolution to tie the development of renewable fuels to the restriction on expansion so that renewable fuel development replaces existing infrastructure rather than creating additional burdens. So this can be done with future ordinance passage. And then finally, we also urge that City Council work with the state to advance new building code regulations that would require seismic retrofits of the terminal owners once they've developed those plans in line with the state's legislating. So thank you so much.
Thanks.
The next three individuals are Susanna Kassoff, Sean Looney, and Samantha Hernandez.
Okay. Hello, everyone. My name is Susanna Kassoff. I use she, her pronouns. I'm a teacher at Grant High School and a volunteer with 350 PDX. I'm speaking today because, like many of us, I'm worried about my future. I'm worried about my students' future. I'm worried about my children's future. And I'm worried about the future of Portland. As other people said today, I woke up this morning to news that the Supreme Court, which less than 1 week ago had stripped me of my bodily autonomy, has now essentially blocked any hope of climate action on a federal level by ruling that the EPA cannot regulate carbon emissions. So now it's up to us. It is more important than ever that our cities take bold steps toward limiting and ultimately dismantling the fossil fuel industry. We cannot allow ourselves to be deceived by greenwashing campaigns. These corporations will stop at nothing to continue business as usual for their own personal gain, even when that business is destroying our hope of a livable future. Now is the time for cities to lead. City Council should boldly approve the fossil fuel terminal zoning amendment, but should go further to strengthen the amendments, clarifying potential loopholes and establishing enforcement and safety mechanisms for renewable fuel storage. And ultimately should set a policy goal of 100% electrification. This is the only way forward to build the safe, healthy, and sustainable communities that Portlanders deserve. Please do the right thing. Thank you so much, and thank you to everyone who's spoken today.
Next is Sean Looney.
I don't see myself, but can you hear me?
Yes, loud and clear.
Thank you. I'm Sean Looney, and I've lived in Linton for 23 years. I'm a former chair of the Linton Neighborhood Association. Linton's a Portland community that has a unique distinction of including upwards of 300 million gallons of combustible fuels, most of which are stored in old tanks. 91% of those tanks adhere to no safety standards, having been constructed before 1993. As you might guess, I'm testifying in support of amendments banning new or expanded fuel, bulk fuel infrastructure. Most residents of Linton understand the dangers of living near tank farms. We might even be a bit more prepared for our upcoming earthquake than other neighborhoods because we live in an area ripe for a potential catastrophe. But we can only do so much. We have a river on one side of us and mountains on the other, and with only one main ingress egress through our community. We are depending on you to help protect us, not only from the very real likelihood of an explosion or a fire, but from the daily effects of poor air quality and the pollution caused by off-gassing of our fuel tanks and railroad cars. So while the earthquake might take place after we or most of us die, the cancer-causing chemicals that we breathe daily might be our undoing. Please set a policy agenda toward 100% electrification. It is truly the only safe course of action for the environment and for all living things, including your neighbors in Linton. Thank you.
Samantha Hernandez.
Good afternoon, Council. My name is Samantha Hernandez. I'm a climate justice organizer at Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility, also known as OPSR. We are an organization of health professionals and public health advocates working to protect human life from the gravest threats to health and survival. I'm here today to voice OPSR's support for the Fossil Fuel Terminal Zone Amendment. Fossil fuel-induced climate change is this century's gravest threat to the planet and its people. The Fossil Fuel Terminal Zone Amendment is the first and necessary step as Oregon endures the worsening impacts of climate change and faces an impending 9.0 magnitude earthquake. The CEI hub is an enormous public health threat, as many have noted, and will be an even more enormous public health threat when the Cascadia subduction zone earthquake occurs. Communities are already experiencing negative health impacts from living next to the CEI hub and Portland Harbor Superfund site. The most recent CEI hub report notes that any air quality impacts from a release at the CEI hub would only compound any existing concerns. Burning petrochemicals produce several types of air pollutants, including volatile organic compounds, nitrogen oxide, sulfur dioxide, and particulate matter. All of these pollutants can have negative effects on human health and quality of life. The Fossil Fuel Terminal Zone Amendment is needed now. The ongoing impacts and future impacts of living near the CEI hub needs to be remedied and prevented while we still can. A spill, leak, or explosion is always possible. Electrification with no allowances to fossil fuel industries to expand is the only way forward. Thank you, Council, for your time, energy, attention, and for the opportunity to testify.
The next three individuals are Story Schwantes, Lynn Hanland, and Lee Chapman.
Hi, Mayor Wheeler and City Commissioners. My name is Story Schwantes, and I'm an air quality scientist living in Northeast. I am in full support of these amendments. I think they are just common sense. Fossil fuel infrastructure needs to decrease, and this is an important part of that process. I'm just going to list off some health impacts that I see and hear about on a daily basis from my work. From fossil fuel infrastructure specifically. Asthma, I have personally known people who have died of asthma attacks. Cancer, all kinds of cancers, heart disease, general premature death, impacts to nervous system function, impacts to kidney function, components like benzene, for instance, which is something that is off, a horrific pollutant that is off-gassed when when you see fossil fuel spills, like petroleum spills, is actually a known carcinogen. Those are just a few of them that I hear about and see regularly. I encourage you to pass these amendments, but also to think further with them and make another important impact on human health by strengthening seismic, you know, mandating seismic retrofits in this area and ensuring that we do not see or breathe the fumes from potential disasters, and even not disasters. A slip up can cause important health impacting spills. Develop better safety mechanisms, I think, as well into this, and enforcement mechanisms for fuel storage. And I would encourage you to not allow for fossil fuel storage expansion. And with the renewable fuel expansion, I'd encourage you to include mandatory reporting requirements. This was previously mentioned, but I think that's a really important element. So there's no fossil fuels that are getting in under the guise of renewable fuels. I think that's an important element of this proposal. So to conclude, pass these, make them better, close all the loopholes, make us safer. Thank you very much.
Next is Lynn Hanlon.
Hi, my name is Lynn Hanlon, and I live and work in outer southeast Portland. And I'm happy today that you will be passing the fossil fuel terminal zoning amendments to ban new or expanded bulk fossil fuel infrastructure. It's a long sentence. Somehow I thought this was a done deal years ago, but I'm glad it's finally actually happening in spite of the Portland Business Alliance and other forces that are focused only on profits, not caring about the health of the community, the city, or indeed the planet. Do not let these amendments be weakened. Do not cave to the PBA and company. Do not allow PBA's amendments mentioned here today to pass. Do not fall for the bait and switch that renewable fuels or biodiesel present. Currently, businesses in the CI hub are not required to reveal how they're using their storage tanks, and increasing storage capacity for biodiesel could easily lead to more fossil fuels. Biodiesel and renewable fuels go boom and spew flames and fumes when the quake hits, just like fossil fuels, so doesn't help there. These fuels do not necessarily have a lower carbon footprint than fossil fuels. In fact, they often are worse. We need to know more about biofuels before we allow this to happen. We as a city must transition away from fossil fuels and renewable biofuels. Electrification, reducing use through better building codes, transforming our transportation system to expand public transit and not widen freeways, pedestrian and bike options are the way to go. We cannot burn our way out of this problem. With today's appalling Supreme Court decision, essentially gutting federal government's power to do anything about climate, this is more important than ever. It's up to you all. You're our last resort here. We owe it to the Portland community to minimize the extreme seismic risk the CEI hub poses and the toxic fumes that are being emitted now and killing people. We owe it to everyone's children, grandchildren, and all those we share the planet with to do everything possible to put the brakes on climate change. These amendments, with the addition of putting a hold on bio-renewable fuels, are an important step in the right direction. Thanks for listening to the community and passing these amendments without PBA's obnoxious additional little points that they want in there. Thank you.
Next is Lee Chapman. I don't think Leah's joined us. The next three are Janet Whale, Jamie Painter, and Nora Stern.
Thanks for the opportunity to testify, Mayor and Council. As has already been stated, in 2016, the City Council passed an historic ordinance to halt new and expanded fossil fuel infrastructure. The need to do this has become even more urgent. This week, we are holding events to remember the 96 Oregonians who died in the climate crisis-caused heat dome of 2021. We need climate action now, and we need a just transition to a clean energy economy. I have to point out that just blocking expansion of fossil fuel infrastructure does nothing to protect Portland or the region from oil train derailments and fires from Zenith's dangerous oil trains. In addition, we oppose any infrastructure expansion for so-called renewable or biofuels until further study has been done on exactly what fuels are coming in. And as has already been stated, with requirements for reporting to the DEQ. These fuels can also explode and burn. Whether they are low carbon depends on many variables, including the feedstocks for the fuels and the carbon intensity of their production. I am very unhappy to hear from Tom Armstrong about the carve-outs for these unproven fuels. Why was public comment not allowed before these were presented? Stopping the growth of fossil fuel infrastructure is well supported by Portlanders and their elected officials. For public health and safety, the protection of our rivers and forest park and our neighborhoods, and the beginning of the end to dangerous fossil fuel infrastructure in our city, we in Extinction Rebellion urge you all to vote unanimously for these fossil fuel terminal zoning amendments, minus the ones that has been mentioned, have been added by Portland Business Alliance. I represent Extinction Rebellion in this matter and myself as a concerned citizen. Thank you.
Next is Jamie Painter.
Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler and commissioners. Thank you so much for allowing me the opportunity to testify today. My name is Jamie Painter, and I've lived in Portland for over 20 years. I'm a proud Portlander and the mom to a rambunctious six-year-old named Oliver. I'm here today to testify in support of the fossil fuel zoning amendments. Today, I'm really worried, not only about the clear risk of the fossil fuels and the risk of explosion and leaks of toxic chemicals, but also about what we're communicating to our children. As a recent OHA report outlined, our children are extremely anxious about climate change and the impacts they will see in their lifetime. Adopting these amendments is a great signal to our children and community that you are listening and taking climate change seriously, and that you're committed to taking the necessary step to protect our community and reducing carbon emissions and fighting climate change. I hope that you will vote to hold the line and not weaken the amendments in exchange for industry promises or make any allowance for further fossil fuel storage expansion. Fossil fuel terminal owners should retrofit their facilities, but this should not come at the expense of further increasing risks to our communities and watersheds from reckless expansion. I know this has been a very long process, and I appreciate your persistence and commitment. Have a great day.
Next, we have Nora Stern. Doesn't look like Nora has joined us. The next three individuals are Daniel Serres, Margaret Butler, and Michael Fairhurst.
Mayor Wheeler, commissioners and staff. Yes. There we go. Okay, thank you. Mayor Wheeler, commissioners and staff, thank you for taking public comment today. My name is Dan Sears, and I'm the conservation director for Columbia Riverkeeper. Thank you for continuing this effort to implement the fossil fuel zoning code amendments after years of fossil fuel industry delays and challenges, and many years after the June 2016 oil train derailment and fire in Mosier that helped to inspire these amendments. The Mosier disaster reminds us that the stakes are high for this policy, and your actions here can benefit people all along the Columbia River. June 28th, 2021, by the way, when it was 116 degrees, Zenith did have oil cars in its loading racks. It tells you the extreme recklessness of this industry. We joined with a coalition of community groups in submitting written comments supporting the staff's research. And I wanted to highlight, when considering gas pipeline and storage capacity, the city can recognize a growing body of evidence showing harmful health impacts of indoor fracked gas use and the climate impacts of the fracked gas industry more broadly, with methane leakage being an unsolved problem. To avoid these harms, it is reasonable for the city to anticipate that fracked gas use will decline if the region is to meet its carbon reduction and public health goals. According to a report by the Regulatory Assistance Project, efficiency gains and improved electric end-use technologies are constraining demand for gas. And utilities may be seeking approval for major investments while the size of their customer base is poised to shrink. And policymakers should start to consider whether broader structural changes are necessary. These amendments take a step towards those structural changes. And in support of these amendments, the city has correctly determined that new gas infrastructure is unnecessary. The city is helping to make a tangible change that can steer our future away from fossil fuel terminals, the risks they introduce, and locking in fossil fuel use. And we support the comments made earlier by the previous commenters, all of them. Thank you.
Next, we have Margaret Butler.
Thank you, Mayor and Commissioners, for allowing me to testify. I'm Margaret Butler with Extinction Rebellion. I have three things to say. First, I'm really grateful to the City Council in 2016 for taking this on and for you all revisiting these amendments based on the understanding that we have to move away from fossil fuels. Every year, things get more dire, both in terms of our short timeline for emissions reductions and as we face the possibility of a subduction zone quake. Last summer's county and city report on what would happen in the event of projected magnitude 9 earthquake underscored those concerns. We need to do more, but the zoning amendments were and are an important tool in moving off fossil fuels and towards a more sustainable future. Please do not weaken the amendments because of industry pressure. Second, the biofuel exemption is concerning. There are many problems with biofuels, including serious questions about how to measure biofuel impact on climate mitigation as biofuels move into the marketplace. And third, I'm a lifelong Portlander who spent 40 years in the labor movement, half of that as a founder and lead staff at Portland Jobs with Justice. The last few years before I left in 2013, J with J activists were bringing proposals to support stopping oil trains and fighting fossil fuel. I knew they were right, but felt constrained by the opposition of parts of the labor movement who were rightly concerned about jobs. I regret that I couldn't act more boldly then, but now I can, and so can you. And I urge you to act boldly now. We need to think about the workers who would be at ground zero in the event of a catastrophic earthquake. And we need to move quickly to transform our economy, including a just transition for fossil fuel workers. The actions we take in the next handful of years are critical. Thank you.
Michael Fairhurst.
Hello, City Council members. My name is Mike Fairhurst, and I'm a member of Extinction Rebellion PDX. I am proud of my city, the beautiful city of Portland, for creating zoning amendments to declare the end of new fossil fuel infrastructure. I'm here today to tell the city to stand firm on this landmark policy. The corporate interests that are fighting this proposal are behind on the science and want to lock Portland into a future that will deliver destruction and climate chaos. I ask each council member today to stand up to those dangerous corporate interests and to instead vote for the public interest. That means no new fossil fuel infrastructure, full stop. We also must have a hard conversation about not so renewable fuels. The truth about not so renewable fuels is that their emissions are highly complicated. Their carbon footprint depends on everything from changes in soil carbon content over time to their impact on supply chains globally. The biggest risk with biofuels is indirect land use change, or ILUC. Switching to biofuels production in one place can result in large greenhouse gas emissions many miles away. For instance, in clear-cutting local or foreign carbon sequestering forests to grow new crops. In the worst case, biofuels are no more an improvement than clean coal. We should not trust the worst climate villains, such as Zenith, to build biodiesel capacity next to their tar sands storage tanks and declare it renewable. It is urgent that the city issue a moratorium on new biofuel infrastructure until the city has thoroughly studied and held public testimony and developed a thorough renewable fuel standards model. The end goal must be electrification, and biofuels do not help us get there. for the continuity of the human race, and in the name of future generations, I am here to demand no more fossil fuel infrastructure and no more not so renewable fuel infrastructure. Thank you for letting me testify.
The final three testifiers are Devin Lawson McCourt, Peter Salinger, and Jan Zuckerman. Devin, are you able to unmute?
Yes. Thank you, Council. My name is Devin Lawson McCourt, and I am an upcoming high school sophomore. My pronouns are he, him, his. I'm a volunteer with Extinction Rebellion, and I'm the chair of the Oregon High School Democrats of Precinct 759. These amendments are a crucial first step towards preventing devastating effects from the anticipated magnitude 9 earthquake, which will affect most of Oregon. Portland's fossil fuel storage hub presents a catastrophic risk of spills, explosions, and toxic fumes in the case of the Cascadia earthquake, according to recent analysts from the Multnomah County and the city of Portland. This is something many of my fellow high school students have taken an action on, and something we've learned in our environmental science class, and which is why we are so adamant about making sure these amendments are passed without all the loopholes and such. Portland's fossil fuel storage hub prevents a catastrophic risk of spills. I already said that. By putting a stop to the careless growth of hazardous infrastructure, these amendments are an essential step in safeguarding the health of the Willamette and Columbia Rivers, as well as our communities. This council ought to adopt a fully electrified policy agenda. This is made abundantly obvious in the most recent International Energy Agency report. To achieve net zero emissions and a stable climate and transportation, heating, and industrial sectors, and they must completely electrify and cannot rely on combustion. In the interim, using renewable fuels should help achieve this goal rather than getting in the way. This is my testimony, and I sincerely hope that you make the correct decision. Thank you.
Next, we have Peter Salinger.
Good afternoon, City Council. My name is Peter Salinger. When I was in eighth grade, Mayor Charlie Hales heard that I, along with a group of fellow youth at my school, were planning on testifying at a hearing for something called the No New Fossil Fuel Infrastructure Resolution. Youth were a rare sight in City Hall at the time, so Mayor Hales and Commissioner Fritz invited me to speak at a press conference they were holding before the hearing. While I could barely see over the microphones up to the podium, I tried my best to represent the youth of Portland. I'd like to read a few words from my remarks at the time. As a 13-year-old, I am already thinking about my future and my children's future and the generations after that. By passing these resolutions, our community can together protect that future. Portland is acting as a role model for other cities along the West Coast and around the world. If we allow more fossil fuel infrastructure to be put in place and more oil trains to pass through our region, Portlanders will be creating fossil fuel infrastructure that will last for decades, perpetuating the fossil fuel economy. It will expose our neighborhoods to an unhealthy environment and the risk of derailment, leaks, and explosions. We would be adding to an already huge danger we face from a major earthquake. I am now a junior in college, have traded podiums for Zoom calls, and we are still rehashing the same issue. Only a few months after the resolution passed in 2016, an oil train derailed in Mosier, Oregon. In the following years, wildfires have ripped through the gorge and turned Portland's sky orange. Just today, the Supreme Court took a torch to the Clean Air Act. Like it or not, it is clear that cities need to step up and take responsibility for our climate. We don't have any time to spare. In fact, we didn't when I was 13. Briefly, I will note that I take issue with the renewable fuels exceptions. Renewable or clean fuel is a classic example of greenwashing and extends our use of fossil fuels into the future. A good example of how one could greenwash a similar product is biomass. While biomass, for example, wood, is technically a renewable fuel, none of us would advocate that we move all of our houses to wood stoves. Biofuel and other forms of clean fuel are greenwashed misnomers, not the solution that we all wish they were. However, with that said, overall, this legislation is important and necessary. Let's pass it. Sans the biofuel exception and continue to fight for our planet. Thank you.
Next is Jan Zuckerman.
Hi, my name is Jan Zuckerman. Thank you for
hearing and listening to all of us today. Earlier this week, I attended the kickoff for the Heat Week to commemorate dozens of Portlanders who died last year, and the message was loud and clear. We need a unified response to the extreme weather caused by human-induced climate chaos. Mayor Wheeler, you stated that we should have addressed this issue 20 years ago. I agree, and we should have implemented the fossil fuel terminal zoning amendments voted in 2016, but here we are again. Each year that passes presents us with greater challenges, clearly teaching us that we can't put off to tomorrow what we must address today. Enough studies have been done by experts to clearly show that the CEI hub is an earthquake and fossil fuel disaster zone. It is up to our city's policies and implementation of those policies to change the course we are on before it is too late and we lose more lives. A few days ago, a youth activist shared with me that they had always thought our city was a leader on climate until they learned about city policies and decisions that pit trees against infrastructure and support the expansion of freeways when we should be setting yearly concrete goals to address the climate crisis. While we can't turn the clock back, we can act now on the climate emergency and support the strongest fossil fuel terminal zoning amendments possible. If we are to meet our climate goals, we need to reduce emissions 10% each year and not stand by while Zenith Energy moves more crude oil than ever while patting themselves on the back for moving biodiesel. Biofuel will not get us to 100% electrification. It will burden us with more dangerous infrastructure that our children in 20 years will have to clean up, while a future mayor will say that we should have done something 20 years before. On Sunday, Mayor Wheeler, you said that the weather events have changed our way of thinking. I hope that this thinking becomes action by standing firm and holding the line on industry pressure and loopholes in the fossil fuel terminal zoning amendments. Thank you very much.
And that concludes testimony.
Very good. Thank you, everybody who testified. Thank you for your thoughtfulness. That concludes the council's acceptance of oral testimony. Colleagues, any questions at this particular juncture? And that's not necessary today. It was really to hear the public testimony. The record for written testimony will remain open until 5 p.m. on Thursday, July 7th. Your testimony must be received by the council clerk by 5 p.m. to be included in the formal record. At that time, the record will be closed. Again, that's 5 p.m. on Thursday, July 7th. This ordinance is continued to Thursday, July 21st at 2 p.m. That will be a time certain. When the council reconvenes, we may potentially introduce additional amendments. If at that time the council determines additional public testimony is warranted for any new proposed amendments, council may reopen the record for the limited purpose of testimony on those amendments. And I believe that concludes our work for today, but I want to make sure with legal counsel that we got everything in we needed to get in legally.
Yes, you covered everything. So just to reiterate, the record is open until July 7th at 5 p.m. Emailing testimony to the council clerk or submitting it through the MAP app is sufficient.
Perfect. Thank you. Good. Thank you. And thank you, everybody who took the time today, both invited testimony as well as public testimony. We always appreciate it. With that, colleagues, we are adjourned. Thank you.